This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right. I don't know where you're at, but in Iowa, it's hot today. It's going to get real hot. Baseball games are already being canceled. The kids have already been talking about getting the sprinkler out in the front yard. That kind of, it's going to be that kind of day. I can hear in the background, the birds are chirping in Kentucky. Yeah. Mr. Tom Waters, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be here. Mm-hmm. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah. You've been on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast a handful of times since I've started doing this. Well, this got to be like five or six or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
At least. At least. I always enjoy catching up with you and your Kentucky hunting adventures. Did you go, other than Kentucky this year, did you go anywhere else?
I did not. I had I take that back. I just got access. I don't really call it going anywhere across the river in Indiana.
Okay.
I've got a couple little farms there. So yeah, I did hunt over there. But my buddy in Texas finally got in another place. So I'm heading back down there in November.
Nice.
And I was really hoping to get up in your neck of the woods in Iowa, but it looks like it's going to take more than four preference points. So next year, hopefully we'll get there.
Yeah. Depending on what zone this point creep is getting crazy. I think people are starting to, I don't want to say get desperate. That's not the right word. They're starting to understand that if they want to hunt some of these states, they're going to do it now. They better do it now and start collecting now because dude, the way that things are happening in the hunting world, non-residents could be shut out of states before we even know it. The way, like, crazier things have happened.
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with all that, but I'm taking a year off because of the knee, dude. I'll tell you this: the knee is feeling a lot better this week as the previous week. So it's like week 13 for me. And I'm just now starting to feel like there's no inflammation or no pain throughout the day. So
that's a big step.
That's a big step, big step. And I got an injection in my shoulder on Thursday. So I'm feeling like not necessarily a new man, but I'm feeling like an old car that got an oil change is basically how I'm feeling today. So. I'm feeling good. I might run for another 100,000 miles. We'll see.
I hope so, man. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. All right. Before we get into the topic today, I'm going to send a shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And I'm going to run through these real quick. I've been a partner with Wasp Archery for a long time. I am a huge fan of their broadheads from just a experience standpoint, amongst other things. But experience is like their broadheads don't fail. They're tough as nails. And whatever they hit, they absolutely destroy, whether I put a good shot on or a bad shot on. Go check out WaspArchery.com. I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. Turkey season's over, so I'm not going to talk about their red dots unless you want to put one on your sidearm. But it's now the time of year where I grab the kids. I start to go on the gravel travels out in the country. We're bringing the spotting scope. We're bringing the binoculars, and we're looking for velvet bucks. So go check out vortexoptics.com and take a look at their rifle scopes, red dots, range finders, spotting scopes, and all the accessories you need for those as well. So next on the list is Code Blue Sense. Go check out CodeBlueSense.com for their real and synthetic deer urines, their scent elimination products, their Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kits. I'm going to tell you this right here. It's every year, it never fails. I planned to go do something this week. I was going to go plan to put up trail cameras. And of course, the heat index is 105. So my old ass is just be like, nope, I'm not going to do that. I'll just pass it on to the next week. But that was the plan, is to go freshen up my mock scrapes, put out my trail cameras. But if you want to find out more information about Code Blue and all of their product line, go check out CodeBlueSense.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. And then last but not least, Reveal Trail Cameras. These guys are going to, dude, I just had one of those. I want to gossip. I want to gossip so bad, Tom. I want to tell you about what's coming. I can't though. They told me, dude, you can't talk about this. Like,
wow.
And so they've had some, cameras, their cameras are going to get an upgrade, and there's going to be some cool things that are kind of happening, with their cameras and their app that's going to take trail cameras kind of in a unique direction. And so I can't wait to share that with everybody. Anyway, if you're looking for a cellular trail camera, and the ease of use is just amazing with these things, go check out tacticam.com/cameras, and you can download the Reveal app anywhere apps are downloaded. So there's that. All right, Tom, do you have trail cameras out yet?
I do. You do. About a third of them. I'm with you. I was going to do some this week, but we're in the same boat as you guys, 100 plus on the heat indexes, and not feeling it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always think, like, if you look at the United States, Southern Iowa is literally on almost the same plane as Northern Kentucky and other states that are deemed the South. Right.
Right.
And so, like, even like, I guess Tennessee would be further south, but all the way into like Virginia and, you know, up all the way to the coast, that we're on that plane. So like, you guys are hot. We're also hot, in the summertime, and lots of humidity around Iowa. So for some reason I always forget that, but today's conversation is about hunters for hungry, right? That, is it for the hungry or hunters for hungry?
Yeah. In Kentucky, it's Kentucky Hunters for the Hungry. And most of the states that have them, that's a derivative, some part of their venison program name.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, is this an independent state, or is this an actual nationwide organization?
It's a great question. There are 35 states that have individual venison donation programs. Kentucky's one of them. We're one of the larger ones. But there's an affiliation that we interact with each other, but they're each individual, charities or programs.
Okay.
Most of them are driven by volunteers. Some of them are affiliated, in varying amounts with the states, like Wisconsin and Minnesota. Their Fish and Wildlife, run them, but most places it's done by volunteers, and, like ours is.
Okay. And how long have you been working with or part of this organization?
Well, Hunters for the Hungry started in 2000 here in Kentucky.
Okay.
7 million meals we've done since 2000. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I've been affiliated with them as a director for about the last 3 years. I guess this is my third season.
Okay.
And as I've gotten older, and I love doing volunteer or things that give back. And when you can find something that marries into a passion that you have, like this was just a great fit. And the people that we work with, between the processors and the other people that are involved with the charity, and a lot of our donors are just aces. It's just really great to have people that are all focused on the same thing.
Gotcha. Okay. So that 7 million meals, is that over how many years is that over the course of?
That's since we started in 2000.
Okay,
so that's
2000.
25 seasons so far, going into 26th.
Right. And so doing the math there, how many deer roughly then throughout the course of it? Like, what does that translate into? Is it only deer, or is it other animals like hogs or turkeys or things like that?
Great question. Yeah, great question. And I was told there'd be no math, but I'm going to do my best here. So the way we run the numbers is we figure we get 4 meals per pound.
Okay.
So if you're talking 7 million, you can back out of that. I can tell you, like, for last year, we did 4,100 deer, which that's 100, and we average 40 pounds per deer.
Okay.
as far as meat. So that's 160,000 pounds. And then you multiply that by four. So we're up close to 700,000 meals just last year.
Okay.
Out of 4,100 deer that are donated.
And that's across the entire state of Kentucky.
Yes, sir.
Gotcha. Okay. Correct. And so there's the people are involved here, like on, you got the hunters and then you got the consumers of this organization.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit before we get into the people, talk to me a little bit about like the mission statement or what the goal of this organization is every year.
Yeah. Great question. Basically Dan, in Kentucky, and this mirrors pretty much across the U.S. So a lot of these statistics will extrapolate out anywhere else there's deer hunting. We have about one in five families that are food insecure. Okay. What that means is it's not like they're starving, they have nothing, and they're homeless. It's they're struggling making decisions in certain cases with seniors where they're going to buy their medicine or they're going to buy food. Mm-hmm. Where you've got children that maybe they're going to have a meal at school through the free lunch program, maybe at breakfast. When they get home, they don't know what they're going to get. Yeah. So our mission is to address that. And to do that through a ministry, for lack of a better term, of volunteers, of hunters that can step up and provide these meals and help these people. And, and we're really blessed in the sense that we can pinpoint where these donations go. So it's not just a generic thing. They don't know where the meat's going. A lot of cases in these rural areas, especially, they'll be familiar with a school program that we're benefiting. They'll be familiar with a particular orphanage that needs help. So we try, and we had good success in making sure that the local hunters know, hey, not only am I donating this and it's going to a good place, I know the place where it's going.
Okay.
So there's a lot of synergy and a lot of benefit from that approach we found.
Right. Okay, there's a lot of logistics involved when you're talking about a perishable item like meat, okay?
Yes.
And we can just stick to the deer. Does a hunter have to sign up for Hunters for the Hungry program before they drop meat off at a specific place? Or is it a butcher, or is it an individual who collects? How's that logistics point work?
Sure. And this is exactly how we do it here. Most places it's the same, but I won't say every place. In Kentucky, all the hunter needs to do is to field dress his animal, take it to the normal processor he utilizes. You'll telecheck it, and check it in the way that you do in your state. And then the processor will take that deer at no cost to the hunter whatsoever. There's no need to sign up for anything. You drop it off just the same as if it was the deer you're dropping off for your own benefit. And at that point, what we do at Kentucky Hunters for the Hungry is we arrange for payment to the processor. So they are paid for their work. And then they will take that deer, and as opposed to making backstraps and roasts or however we would want it, sausage and everything, they take that entire deer and they grind it.
Okay.
And then we have ground venison to be able to distribute out to people that need it.
Gotcha. Okay. Cause I would be like, this is just as a joke, but some guy's like, actually, I want the jalapeno sticks with, I don't want ground. I want the jalapeno cheddar sticks, please. I'm like, okay, buddy, whatever. Take what you can get. So it's all ground. Is that like cut with beef at all or fat, or is it just whatever's on the deer?
It's just straight venison. Gotcha. Now, circle back to one thing you said, and for people listening, they can't see this, but guys are watching it when you put it. These are venison snack sticks.
Yep.
And what we've done is in the last few years, this is a great program. Children primarily at schools, they'll have situations where they had, like we mentioned, breakfast, dinner or a lunch supplied, but they won't have anything at home sometimes for evening meals or for the weekend. And you probably have a similar program in Iowa, like Blessings in a Backpack, where kids will get food put into a backpack that they'll take home for the weekend. And generally people are donating all kinds of things like canned goods or ramen, but it's a real problem having a shelf stable protein.
Right.
And we have come up with these venison snack sticks, beef sticks, whatever you want to call them. They're like a Slim Jim.
Yep.
And they taste fantastic. The kids love them. And what we will do is we will give those to the kids over the weekend. It costs us, we raise the money for this through our donations, about $1 for each one of these. Okay. In addition to the venison being donated, but it comes from donated venison. Last year, we did a little over 100,000 of these. So, and our feedback loop of how much the kids like it is from these bus drivers, yeah. because they'll find these wrappers
on the floor,
all over the floor. I mean, they're fantastic tasting, they're shelf stable, and we can get them to the kids so that we know that they have something over the weekend or through a summer program, a good healthy protein.
Yeah. Are there any like USDA rules where, because technically, you can't sell venison for, like, I don't know about in Kentucky, but I know in Iowa, you cannot shoot a deer, make something from it, then sell it.
That's correct. Because that's a federal rule.
A federal rule. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. So how do you guys get around all of that with this donation process?
Well, it's because nobody's paying for it.
Right.
Every bit of this is free. You can't sell, game meat in the U.S., but you can donate it. Okay. And in fact, from a national standpoint, you look at our numbers. We had 145,000 deer harvested last year in Kentucky. We've been doing cartwheels. We had our best year ever. We did over 4,100 deer donated. Mm-hmm. But back to the math thing, you extrapolate that out, that's only 3%. So the bottleneck is not in funding that we have to be able to get this venison out to people. The bottleneck is we need more hunters donating deer.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'm assuming the people who, you know, a lot of hunters, I'm not saying all of them, but a lot of hunters are shooting deer and keeping the meat themselves, right?
Of course.
For consumption.
Yes.
Are the people who are donating the meat strictly donating it because they like hunting and not the meat? Or is this something that they're the extra mile and they're shooting multiple deer a year? They're keeping most of it for themselves, but then donating an additional deer to this program?
Yeah, the vast majority are people that are donating additional deer, but there are people that just flat out don't like venison. Yeah. Their family doesn't like it so much and they love to hunt. This kind of dovetails into some national statistics that we get from NDA. In the last couple of years, 41% of hunters have been successful. In 2011, 48% were. So what we're finding is people are, I think they're being more selective. I think along with the, wanting mature bucks and we're holding out, you know, we're not shooting the forkies as much. I think that's a big piece of it. But we need people to shoot more. Most states have, an average of 10 doe tags you can get. Mm-hmm. And most states average 2, buck tags. So it's not that there's not an availability out there. We just need people to take the opportunity to give back, not only from the standpoint of it's a great thing to do and you're going to help families, you're changing lives.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So how is there a quality process that happens, or is basically the processor, they obviously have to be certified by the USDA and all of that stuff. So that is the certification. How do you get the quality meat from the processor to the end user without spoilage? It's stored. Do you guys have an outside facility? All of that stuff.
Great questions. To your point on the processors, they're all approved processors within the state that we utilize. Most of them will have a drop off. Not all of them, but they'll have a drop off that they're definitely manning during the normal hours.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have a 24-hour place where you can drop off as well. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, the meat is obviously taken care of. Now, if somebody turns in a deer that's not in good shape, or they hadn't been field dressed, or there's a problem, we haven't had a lot of that, because generally most of the people that are, you know, wanting to do the right thing are people that are going to do the right thing, right?
They take it serious. But, yeah.
But yeah, so yeah. That hasn't been a big issue. But if there is a problem, we rely on these processors to make a judgment call. They're not going to put anything out there that isn't fit for consumption. Right. They have their reputation at hand as well.
Gotcha. Okay.
And as far as how we transport it, all of them have huge freezer situations. Yep. So we will go and they will let us know, hey, I've got 500 pounds or I've got 1500 pounds. Then we'll coordinate. We'll go pick it up. We have three trailers that are refrigerated trailers, or if it's a close and it's, you know, it's not going to be an issue, we'll throw it in coolers and take it to either the orphanage or the soup kitchen or wherever it needs to go. That's going to do the most good, preferably, like we said earlier, in an area that's close to where the hunters are actually donating the deer.
Gotcha. Okay. And so then does this meat go to individuals or does it go to facilities that then serve individuals?
Absolutely. That's a great way to go into that question. Most of the cases, Dan, we will take it to a facility that is either taking care of orphans or it's a outreach through a ministry that's taking care of people that are short on food. There's a place, one of the places we utilize here in Louisville, just to give you an idea of the need. We took 2,700 pounds to this one facility and it was passed out that within 24 hours.
Okay.
So people take it. And another thing that's really cool, we've got a great relationship with Kentucky Fish and Wildlife in a number of areas. And one place it shows up is they have an association with the University of Kentucky Extension. They provide recipe cards. So people that don't know, you know, what exactly to do with it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different recipes. Basically, it's anything you can do with hamburger. You know, right. You and I know that.
Right.
But we really make sure that people know how to utilize it and best ways to cook it so that, you know, they're going to enjoy it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, you know me and I love eating wild game. But I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef. And that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com. What are the roadblocks? Like, are there any roadblocks or bottlenecks or things that prevent you from making this bigger or reaching more people every year?
Well, there are. And one we spoke to earlier, the number one right now, and I think this is across the board. I don't think it's just here in Kentucky. We need more hunters to keep this in mind and to be at the forefront of taking an extra deer. Mm-hmm. It costs you no money. It costs you nothing except the time to field dress it and to drop it off. Mm-hmm. And the impact you make is humongous. I mean, on average, you're going to have 40 pounds of the best protein most anybody's ever going to have as far as healthiness and as far as taste. And you're going to get 160 meals from one deer that you drop off. The other thing that's a big part of it, I know you and I've talked in the past, and it's a constant thing we have to deal with. For us to enjoy this sport, we have to fight off antis anti-hunters, and more importantly, the middle of the road people that are kind of like, yeah, it's okay. We need them to think well of us.
100%.
And one of the best ways we can do that is to highlight these efforts that hunters are doing. I mean, when people find out that, hey, we're turning in literally millions of pounds of food to people that need it, that really helps us. And you've got situations I'm sure you're on top of, like the thing that happened in Washington State a week or two ago, where they're actually trying to vote hunting out of existence in a state. And it's not going to stop there. So it's incumbent upon us to make sure that we're doing our part to promote not only the healthy lifestyle and the passion that we love, but the good that we can do through it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy what's going on out west. Let's see here. The thing that I was thinking about as you were talking there was everybody always is talking about, oh, there's too many does, or, you know, you hear people say there's too many does. Well, doing this allows you to get out and do what you love, which is hunt.
Yes.
And then also do something that's kind of cool. And that's go take the deer to, you know, a processor and help other people who are, I guess the term would be less fortunate than, than
for
what
sure.
we are.
People
right?
of need.
And people of need, right? So it's not like there's an individual groups of individuals out there who have to qualify for this program, let's say like food stamps or EBT cards or something like that. This is just, this goes to other organizations that help individuals like that.
Yeah, it's sad. I hope there's a day in the future where we have to hunt to find down people that need it. Yeah. But the need is such that we have people contacting us all the time.
Right.
Hey, what do you have? Do you have some venison? You know, and from a practical standpoint, there's a couple other things I want to hit on just as hunters.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's interested, not everybody, but a lot of people public land or not on public land, they're interested in food plots and they're this trick and how can it, the best thing I know of to help your rut hunt is to get rid of some does.
Yeah.
If you want to see bucks seeking and chasing and moving, if they've got a way out of whack doe to buck ratio, they don't have to move. They don't have to chase.
Yeah.
So get out there early season and knock down a couple of does. And donate them. And it's going to help your rut hunt. Another thing too, you and I and vast majority of your listeners, I'm going to guess, we're bow guys. We will gun hunt from time to time. But in Kentucky, for example, 145,000 deer killed last year. Half of them were opening weekend of gun season.
Yeah.
So we need gun hunters. And if say you're a bow hunter and you only want to take your buck, get your gun out, knock down a couple of does early season or late season, whenever your gun season is, and do something to not only help others, but to help the sport and to help the resource.
Yeah. I had a conversation with a guy, who hunts in an urban type scenario where there's a lot of deer, like in neighborhoods and things like that. There's a lot of car collisions. And so he's part of an urban deer hunting program where he's basically killing deer that are in people's backyards and things like that. And he kills so many deer every year and then he takes it to the butcher and does the same thing, right? It gets donated to meals. I believe this is up in Maryland. But the butcher's just like, dude, I feel like grinding these back straps up is is a bad mojo, basically. And so every time the guy goes to donate a deer, because I think he's donating like 10 some deer every year.
Nice.
He cuts the back straps out of for him and gives them to the hunter and is like, dude, you can't grind back straps up. Right. I get it. This goes to a good cause, but the rest of this deer is going to get ground up, but you got to respect the back strap. So
I can't argue with the guy for sure, man. We, go ahead.
I was just going to say, as far as the state is concerned, do you have to keep it within the state? Like, do you accept, do they accept deer across state lines or anything like that?
We have not been in a situation where we have, first off, you can't take a deer carcass across state lines with all the CWD stuff. I think that's pretty much everywhere now.
Right.
So that hasn't been a case. And our need is such in Kentucky that we have not had additional deer that, you know, we would want to provide to another state. Now, I do hunt in Indiana, and they have a similar program called Farmers and Hunters for the Hungry. And I've donated deer up there because I can't bring it across the river for the reasons that you mentioned. One thing I did want to throw out, too, you talked to, I want people to know how much the Fish and Wildlife help us with this program. Basically, what we do is we have to raise money, obviously. Our number one money expense is with the processors. And just like hunters are declining because of age and they're aging out, processors are similar. We have a lot of people that just, you know, they're not making enough money. It's dirty, hard work. It's difficult to get help because obviously you're not, you don't have a static need, but when gun season hits and people are dropping all these deer off, they need help and it's hard to hire help. So our money primarily goes to processors. We're real proud that we've been able to increase the amount we pay processors because we realize the struggles that they're having. But the Fish and Wildlife allows us through the Pittman-Robertson Act funds that we're all so familiar with. They help us out a lot with offsetting those costs, along with some really great sponsors. Kentucky Gun Co. It's kind of like a Shields from where you're from. You're an amazing partner. We also have a great partner with Farm Bureau, the Kentucky Farm Bureau here, as well as Transamerica. So these companies help us gain funds that pay for the processing. And then all of us that are parts of, we're all volunteers, everybody on the board. We just do this because it's important to us and we love the opportunity to reach out and help people.
Have you ever run into a scenario where there's surplus at the end of the year where you can't get enough meat to, or there's too much meat at the end of the year?
Never.
Okay.
No, we could, you know, my goal is, I was just playing with some of these numbers before, you know, you and I got on the podcast today, and I saw that 3%, and, you know, I'm going to make it my goal or our goal to get up to 5%. And like I said, we were doing cartwheels that we did 4,100 deer last year. Well, we need to do, I think 5% is doable, but we've really just got to promote this. It's got to be something where people think of the same way as when, okay, I got to buy my license. Hey, I need to donate a deer this year. I mean, we just need that kind of market penetration, for lack of a better term.
What does the fundraising goal or process look like for you guys to get money in your hands to pay these processors to do this job?
Well, we try to stay ahead of the curve. There's been times where we've had more deer than we've had money. Now we're in a really good place, as of right now, knock on wood, where we have the money to take on more deer. But the processing is, the process is going out to these companies, some of the ones I mentioned, working with your Fish and Wildlife Department to make sure that they're a part of it, because there's a lot of funding available there through Pittman-Robertson. And then just networking and getting our story up. The more people know about this, I mean, how could you be against this? There's really not a downside here. Everybody's being benefited. The landowners are benefited. It helps with crop damage. And we have a new thing here this year. We've got a 4-day additional firearm antlerless season. And we're really hoping to kind of leverage that and be alongside of Fish and Wildlife on that and say, look, and that's going to happen early, like around muzzleloader, late September here. So we're really hoping that we can jump in and leverage that to get more deer donated this year.
What's the marketing look like for this? Like, how are you telling hunters or getting the word out to guys like me, who are just like, hey, dude, do us a huge favor. Go out, shoot one extra deer this year and donate it to our cause.
The way we approach it primarily through social media, we've got a good social media presence, a few thousand followers on that. We also try to do programs like this, podcasts. We additionally will do a lot of outreaches at like outdoor fests, different ones. We probably do 4 to 5 of those a year. And then we have a pretty active Kentucky Whitetails Facebook page with around 40,000 people on it. But we just try to maintain a presence, and we're trying to get a little bit more information driven, not just about our mission, but so that we're in front of people regularly. You know this drill better than I do. I should be asking you what we need to do, because you have really, you know, from where you started with this, but we're just really trying to get more, awareness and then build on that, because the real time, like I said, the real time when we need to shine is that first weekend of rifle season, because that's right. when the vast majority of deer are killed.
How does a processor become qualified for this program?
Well, there are different, they don't qualify for us. They qualify through the state and through regulations that are already in place. I don't have a percentage, but I can tell you a lot of them are also USDA. So they'll not only do game that's provided to them to process, but they'll also do any other kind of like beef. And you'd asked about other animals. We actually had a buffalo, a bison, two bison contributed to us from a local bison oh, nice. Farm. So that's really cool. But that process is state driven. It's not that we are coming on top of it and say, hey, in addition to these state regs, mm-hmm. we need you to do X, Y, Z. Our comfort level is if they're hitting the state regulations and the USDA regulations, yeah. we're good.
Yeah. Do you guys have like a banquet every year or some kind of gathering, or it's just like or how do you raise the funds mm-hmm. to pay the processors?
Sure. So we go out and beg, borrow, and steal mm-hmm. wherever we can.
Yep.
We also do, we have a 3D archery shoot we do at a sportsman's club where people will come out right before the archery season. They'll pay money there. We direct people towards our website. They will donate funds there. And we'll go directly to these large contributors, either through the insurance companies that I mentioned mm-hmm. or through Fish and Wildlife or through individuals. And we try to network within people that we know. People will come up and see us at these outdoor fests and like, yep. oh, we really like this. Or what can we do to help? We'll also reach out to other nonprofits that look for opportunities to help within their areas. Mm-hmm. And they will give us funds like for the meat sticks program for local schools in that area. Just anywhere there's available funds, we're going to try to get it.
Gotcha. Okay. So is there anything else or any other information that we need to talk about how this works? I know obviously you live in Kentucky and mm-hmm. the people in Kentucky, but there's usually, I think the Iowa, they call it the Hush program mm-hmm. where, you can donate and give to the people in need. Is there anything else we need to talk about today about programs like this?
Yes, I would direct everyone to National Deer Association website.
Okay.
Kip Adams did an article back in March on this, and you can search on their website for that article for venison donation. Mm-hmm. And they have a link to all the processors, not all the processors, but most of the processors throughout the country where people can find a place to donate the deer. Right. And each one of these processors, again, it's no cost. All you do is show up with it. Follow your state regs. We call it telecheck here. However you check in a deer, tag a yep. deer, do that, drop it off, and the processor and the Hunters for the Hunger group we'll take care of it at that point. CWD, everybody's, obviously dealing with that. We have a very limited impact on it, but it's going to grow for us just like it does everybody else. Mm-hmm. But what we do is in the states or in the counties where there is a CWD issue, we will have the deer tested for CWD before it's donated out. So that's all taken care of. There's no additional steps that people need to take other than, if you'll get the deer, the rest of it's easy.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, Tom, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of the day to talk about this. It's not the sexy strategy conversation that people love, but this is just another example of like the community that we are in, right? The hunting community right. doing something for others. And, we as hunters have an opportunity here to really contribute to society, even take the ruthless murderer mask that people put on us sometimes, like, oh, you kill animals, you piece of shit type, yep. you know what I mean? And yep. so there's really an opportunity there for us to take that like shroud off of us and just show the country that we're kind and we actually love the animal and we love just make us look better in a sense.
Yeah. We need all the positive mojo and yeah. vibes we can get
Yep, absolutely. And so this is just an opportunity for us to do that, but also contribute to society. So, Tom, thank you very much. I know, like, I'll just say it for the state of Kentucky for doing what you do. And I love the numbers that you guys are putting up and the number of meals that you contribute every single year to the state of Kentucky and those, you know, those who rely on them. And so thank you again for doing what you do. Thank you for coming on once again. And hopefully we have another conversation here in a handful of months about you putting down another big buck.
I hope so too. Dan, thanks so much for the platform and all the work you do, and really appreciate your help.